This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. We are touching on a very taboo subject this week. Not too sure where it's going to fit in the program. We've still got the last bit, Alan Morris, and of course the Judge Julie segment, which we recorded last week, but it had so much in that program last week, we couldn't fit it in. Good result at Hamilton for you, Barry?
Well, it's always a good result when you win. It was only by a trick or two that decided it. It was pretty close between first and second, but there you go. Better to be lucky than good.
We were in the house team. We actually had three different partners in our team. They were swapping in and out as they were able.
What do you mean three different partners?
Well, part of the house team, in the morning, we had Nigella and Karen Thompson, and then we had Nigella and Richard Wagstaff, and in the last round, we had Catherine Cameron and Helen Rinaldi, all part of the house team.
They're not three different partners. That's three different partnerships. Well, you played as well. There must have been four different partnerships.
Pam and I were constant.
So there's four different partnerships in your team. That's spreading it around.
It is.
You got a couple of wins, though? Or you
did, we did. It's all great being in a house team. Some of those boards, you actually need a system that you're used to. Instead of sitting there trying to figure out what the hell's going on and do I push or do I not, I guess that's what makes it exciting.
No, not at all. It's simple. Teams is an easy game. If you think there might be game on, you bet it. That's all that you need to do. If you don't miss any of your games, you'll win.
Right. I see.
There's no ifs, buts, or maybes. You don't fool around. If you think you've got game on, you just bet it and hope it makes. Some of them will.
Okay. Well, that's one tip, I guess, for teams.
That's a very old tip. I always say it to my teammates. If they want advice, I always say to them, bid your bloody games, is what I tell them.
Actually, I remember that. That's right. Yeah. I must remember to tell our teammates that then.
You don't have to do anything else. Just bid all your bloody games and make them when you can and you'll do well.
Sound advice. So what's on the agenda this week? Is there anything spectacular?
Auckland have got their two big 10A pairs on the Saturday and the 10A teams on the Sunday.
Whoa, okay.
So they'll be big, run at the Auckland Bridge Club.
That'll be pretty cool to look at.
And it seems pretty clear to me that you can't be playing, or you'd know that.
I guess you're going up there?
Just going up for the teams.
Oh, right.
See how we go there?
When you're looking at tournaments, what you're going to play, do you think that how much prize money comes in? If you think, oh, there's a good one in Auckland, I'm going to go there and play that. And if I win, I'm going to rub my hands with and get it dirty with lots of money issued to me. Do you reckon that's a ploy
really?
That some players?
I mean, some clubs, and I better not name them, seem to be charging a lot more than everybody else. And, you know, I think I sort of got to the point where I think, well, I don't really want to pay that much to go there and play. Maybe I don't. So, I mean, I think you look at that. But the taboo subject, of course, is, and you've snuck it in there early, is the prize money thing. And it's sort of been noticeable lately that a lot of clubs seem to be getting a bit stingy with the prize money. And if they think that players don't talk about it, let me tell you, they do. And we sort of know who the stingy ones are. So if you think, well, we'll save money, we'll cut back on the prizes, players do talk about that, and clubs get reputations for being a bit miserable, and it comes up.
Oh, okay. So if you go to a tournament, do you have a preconceived amount if you're like playing in a 3A or a 5A or even a 10A? Do you have an amount that you think for that amount of play and that amount of sometimes torture that you have to go through to get to the number one and get an envelope, do you think that they should be paying more as the A points go up? Obviously, it's a bit tougher, isn't it?
Well, it is, but I don't know whether that actually happens because the costs are not that much difference. You know, you still have a budget. You charge so much per player and you have whatever's left at the end. And I know at the Hamilton Bridge Club, I don't think it's any secret, we sort of look at paying out about 30% of the pot goes in prizes.
Yep.
And I think that's fair. But some clubs, geez, you'd think it was their own money. They don't want to pay out anything. and it can be pretty poor. And I just think that if they think that they want to make their tournaments attractive to people, if you actually finally do manage to do quite well, and then they give you, a handshake and a bottle of wine, well,
Yeah.
you're probably not going to go back.
But if they give you a pretty certificate.
Oh, spare me the pretty certificate. I just want the money.
Okay.
Anyway, that all sounds a bit mercenary. I mean, look, if they're going to make you pay through the nose for it, at least if you get somewhere, you expect to get a decent payout at the end.
All right.
Do you think I'm going to generate a few emails in saying, he's too much about the money?
I don't know. I think if you do win, I think you should get a decent whack. And for me, I've always believed that, and because I could, as president of Hamilton, believe that the prize money for coming first definitely has to be $100 or more.
I absolutely agree, and I jump up and down and go crazy, and they probably get sick of me, but I'm never going to see a tournament run in Hamilton where you get less than 100 bucks to the winner.
Well, it just seems a decent amount, don't you think?
Well, I mean, 100 bucks probably is not going to buy you that much these days, but it is a decent amount. If you win 100 bucks, you think, oh, yeah, that's okay. But if you pay 40 and they give you 60, you think, geez, and my hourly rate wasn't very good.
If you want to tell us, one, as a player, if you think you've been hard done by, we don't particularly need to know what the club name is, but we won't share the club anyway. Just sometimes when you go up and you get the handshake and an envelope and you open it up and you're not really smiling, why don't you let us know when you've had those times?
Zoneshuffle@gmail.com. Let us know. You can be anonymous if you want. Or maybe you've opened up the envelope and you've thought, wow, look at all this money. This is terrific. So either way, if you get a really good prize or a really bad one, or even a really average one, just let us know how much, what sort of
Yeah.
tournament it was. We'll spread the word.
I know with Congress and having the 40 and the 38 point events, that's going to be pretty impressive. And Congress, I guess the prize money is always advertised early, so you already know. Does it make any difference that you already know? I guess not. You still go down and enter, don't you?
Yeah. Am I going to be diplomatic here or not?
Knock your socks off.
Look, I mean, I know they've got to make the budget work, but the prize money at Congress is not been great recently. I actually haven't seen this year's one. Maybe it's going to be increased, but I doubt it. NZ Bridge isn't exactly, coffers aren't exactly overflowing.
Yep. Okay.
But I mean, hey, I mean, nobody ever brings it up. People probably do think, and it does seem $399 per player to enter the teams is a lot of money.
Okay.
And you probably think if you win something, you should get a decent whack.
And
Oh,
that's not a clip on the ears.
well, $399 to enter, you expect to get something if you win. If it's going to cost you more to enter, well, the prize money ought to go up. It makes sense to me. I'm just a country boy. Seems logical.
I'm going to have a look, Barry.
The court's in session. The court's in session now. Here
G'day,
come
this
the
week we have the
judge. Here
judge.
come the
Before we start, I just want to say we met the judge and bailiff at table one, and I'm just wondering what happened was the bailiff pulled out a card by mistake, like a minor penalty card, and the director came over and ruled pretty much perfectly, because we discussed this last week on the Bridge Zone. And my question is, was it a setup?
Okay. For a start, when he pulled his card, the four of diamonds out, the three of clubs dropped on the table. He did
Oh, this is
not
the about him.
pull the three of clubs out, otherwise it would not have been a minor penalty card. That would have
Oh,
been
right.
a major one,
Barry
but
thought
not
maybe
possible.
he was just testing the director.
No. He might test directors a bit, but no, he wasn't.
The director did extremely well. It was almost like he was listening to the Bridge Zone the previous week.
David's been a director for quite a substantial amount of time. I think he's probably come across it fairly frequently.
Oh, right. Yeah. Classic.
It wasn't actually the question, but I just thought I'd mention because there's a bit of irony there. The question is, if one of the opponents makes a bid and you ask their partner what it means, and their partner says, "I can't remember," what happens?
They call the director. 100% of the time. They don't make it up. They don't say what they think it is. They call the director. The director will come to the table. They will tell the person who's doing the explaining to go away. Then they will ask the person that made the bid what their agreement is. All right.
Oh.
When you are explaining a bid to an opponent, you never, ever start with, I think,
Right.
right? Or I guess, or this is what I would take it to be, because that is not telling your opponent what your agreement is. It is telling your partner what you think their bid means, but it is saying nothing to your opponents about what the bid means. If your opponents don't have an agreement about the meaning, there is no agreement. You don't make it up.
Right.
Really, really important. This causes a lot of problems because as soon as I say, oh, I think partner's showing four hearts and 10 spades or something, you have told your partner what you think their hand is, and they're not entitled to know that. And the opponents are left in no man's land, not knowing what's right and what's wrong.
I think a lot of people, what you just said, Julie, think that if they just say, I take it to be, that that'll all be fine, right?
No. And if you're online, the director can turn your partner off so they can't hear what you say. So you call the director. If you don't know what the bid means, or if you've forgotten, like we've got an agreement, but I can't remember. And I
Right.
played years ago, I was playing Ekarana and I was playing with Ken Newell, just a club night, and Patrick had written the system. And there was this bid, and they asked me what it meant. And I said, I don't know. Patrick wrote the system, so it's got some meaning because I alerted it. And when
Right.
Patrick writes systems, I have a fair idea about where we're going here. So I said, I will leave the table and Ken will explain what the bid means. Because I mean, I thought I might know, but I couldn't remember what the bid meant.
Right, okay. I
And
don't think
usually,
that happens very often, Julie, when
right.
people say, oh, I don't know, the director isn't called. I think opponents just say, okay, we'll just soldier on a bit then.
That's wrong because you're entitled to know the agreement. So at club level in particular, there's system cards, which people don't often have at club level. But what they do is they tend to play the same system with other groups of people. So you and your partner, when they play with Joe Smith, both play the same system with him as they play with each other, right?
Right,
So we
okay.
can ask Joe what the agreement is,
Okay.
right? Because he'll know what the agreement is. And the other thing is that when someone makes a bid, they don't normally make it because there isn't an agreement, all right? They might decide, I hope it means this, in which case there might not be an agreement. But in general, because they've played with each other for a while, there will be some either inferred agreement, because in the past, this is what has happened, and therefore partnership experience overrides anything that's written down anyway. If your partner completely ignores the system at frequent intervals to decide to do other things, that becomes part of your explanation. Because your experience is when partner makes this bid, very often they don't mean exactly what it's written down, they mean something just slightly different.
Yeah.
Okay,
Okay.
that's really important. If you don't know, you can say you don't know, you can call the director and or if you've got a playing director, you can just say, you know, I'll go away and my partner can explain. You do need a director's approval to leave the table, but I mean, with playing directors, these things get a bit complex and difficult and affect what the playing director can play as well. So,
Yeah. Well, that sounds good. Learned something today. Awesome.
okay. Thank you, Julie.
thank
Thank
you.
you.
Bye.
Whai ake nei. Coming up next, the remaining of the message from Alan Morris, Chairman of New Zealand Brewing.
And as you know, this year for Congress, we're starting the event with the teams and finishing with the pairs. The teams for the Open is a 40A event, and the New Zealand Pairs Open is a 30A event.
Something we've never had before,
So
anything
that's
that's
new.
the
And you're going to only have in the teams eight qualifying, and they will stay in that. They'll either play in the final or they'll play in a plate. they won't come back partway through another event, which has currently happened.
Yeah, that sounds good idea. Well,
I think so.
Mm. It has been a bit messy in the past, and you've always wondered, what are we going to do with these eight that lose in the first round? Or
yeah, correct. Yeah, so you're going to have to work hard to make the top eight. Yeah. If you don't, then there's a whole pile of events that you can participate in. Mm. But once you're in the top eight, then you'll stay in that environment through that whole event.
We ended our conversation with Alan Morris talking about the purpose of the New Zealand Bridge Foundation. He confirms the following.
So the foundation is, in effect, the charitable arm of New Zealand Bridge.
Right.
Okay. It's there to kind of support the charitable functions, primarily around bridge players, with a huge emphasis on youth. It was left a number of endowments, and it generates revenue through what was the old Babbage, is now the Lovelock. It has a portfolio of investments, and it uses the return on those investments to support initiatives. And they could be a club wants a new dealing machine, and it might make an application, and the foundation would consider that through the trustees, and they may well provide a grant. They support youth going to Canberra every year. And now, of course, the foundation is headed by Dwayne Crombie. And there are four other trustees that meet online to consider applications, to consider their investments. So they run an investment program. They've got over $300,000 anyway, and it's from the yields out of that that they use to support initiatives.
Right.
Now, they helped with Matariki, which was there to support the international team. Matariki, the proceeds went to the foundation, so they were tax exempt. That was useful. So more of the money will go to the players who are representing New Zealand in Denmark in August.
That's not too far away, is it?
No, it's pretty close. And I thank you very much as usual.
Thank you, Alan.
Okay. Thanks, Alan. That was great.
We'll catch up soon. Ciao.
Will do. How many partners do you think you need to get through Congress?
Well, I'm hoping just one.
Well, I'm going to have three.
Three? What are they just like? Is it sort of like a tag team? You know, one of them is flat on their back, you know, collapsed, and then the other one tags their hand and moves in and sits in their chair.
Probably sounds like that.
Is that how it's going to work?
No. Well, I've got a teams partner, and then I got asked to play the pairs on at the end of the event, and I said, "Oh, yeah, I could do that." And so now I'm looking for a partner to play Swiss. Now, I already have someone in mind, and they're just checking their schedule. So I will have three.
Three. So one isn't enough. Two isn't enough. Three may be enough. Do you think that by the time you get to later in the week, you'll be looking for another one?
No. I've never done that before. I've never shopped. But, you know, different people asked, and I said, oh, okay, yeah, I'll play. That'll be good.
I know our Swiss pairs and the online Swiss pairs in Hamilton, there were, I think on the last night, there were four people that had connection issues, and we needed to find replacement players at the last minute to fill in. Were you one of those?
Yes, I was. I was one, but I filled in week two. So they needed another fill-in for week three. So they just said, oh, look, I'll play with her, which was cool. But I tell you what, on our very last board, we got a score of plus 1,100.
Oh, that's always a good way to finish. I've got a quick story I have to share with you too from the National Pairs, which was pretty, I don't know whether it was bridge-related really, but it was pretty funny. So Johnny Davidson was driving up, and he stopped to get directions. And he stopped his car. He didn't turn it off. Yeah. He got out. He crossed the road and talked to this person, got some directions, got back in his car, one of those one, a keyless one where you don't have to put the key in the ignition. He drove to the bridge club, got there, turned the car off, realized he had no keys.
Oh.
So now he couldn't turn the car back on. He couldn't lock it. And I don't think Johnny Davidson would mind telling the story. I hope you don't, Johnny. Anyway, somebody posted it on Facebook that Johnny had lost his keys and, you know, whereabouts it was, whatever. And some random person said, oh, yeah, I've got those. And he got his keys back. So I don't know whether this person picked them up off the road or what they did. But pretty funny story.
Oh,
and there was one, by the way, just talking about partners like that, there was one player didn't arrive. So somebody got to play a couple of matches just in the National Swiss Pairs before the player got there.
Oh, that is the power of having standbys, isn't it?
Indeed. Always the other thing is, if you're running a tournament, make sure you've got some standbys.
Yeah, that's a great tip. You got to know when to hold up, know
when to fold up, know when to walk away. Okay, my tip for this week is about bidding no trumps.
Oh.
Sometimes the opponents are bidding a suit and it's your turn to bid. I think bidding no trumps, if you've got a stopper in their suit, you should be looking at bidding no trumps. If you don't have a good suit of your own to bid and you've got their suit stopped, you should be looking at bidding no trumps. Now, you might think, oh, they've overcalled hearts, but I've only got, you know, pass open to diamond, and they've overcalled, but I've only got two little clubs. What about they lead one? Don't worry about the two little clubs. My tip is just bid no trumps. As long as you've got the suit that they bid covered, your partner will have a fair idea of what you've got. Even the person who was talking to me about this, they opened two hearts and they had the hearts well covered, but they only had two little clubs and they had about 17 points, so enough to overcall two no trumps, showing something like 16 to 18 and a balanced hand and a stopper in their suit. That's a pretty good description of your hand. And the auction isn't over yet. Partner might decide to transfer you to spades or they might do whatever they like, but at least they'll have your idea of your point count within a couple. They'll roughly know your shape. They know you've got a heart stopper. It's a good idea to bid no trumps in that situation. And you know what? Sometimes they'll open three hearts. And sometimes, well, you're just going to have to bite the bullet and bid three no trumps. And if they lead a club and take the first six club tricks, it's probably not the worst thing that will ever happen to you. But in reality, they'll probably lead a heart.
That's right.
I know that somebody's going to bid no trumps somewhere next week. And the opposition are going to lead something else. And my name is going to be mud. My ears will be burning. I think as a percentage action, just do it. Bid no trumps.
That sounds great. I was listening to Sorry Partner today, and they were interviewing Larry Cohen. And they kept going on about what's your favourite conventions. And he said, I don't really like convention. And he named his top four conventions. They asked him if he had one that he really favoured, and he said, yes, it's called CRIFS, C-R-I-F-S. He said, it's the convention that says Cohen's rules in fourth seat. And what that convention says is that if you're playing against good players, and you know they're pretty decent, he said, just pass it in, and they'll be kicking themselves that they never got a good board. But if you're not playing against decent position, he said, just have a go. And I thought, how's that for a convention? Check out the opposition and pass if you think they're a decent pair and have a crack if they're not.
How do you know, though, how good they are? I can remember hearing a story from, well, the Gill Mind, if he's listening, Scott Smith, and something happened at his table and he thought, well, I wonder if these people know what they're doing. He didn't really know them, and he thought, it was a bit of a problem for him. He didn't know whether they knew what they were doing or not as to what he was going to do next. Anyway, he looked over, and he noticed there was a clue. What do you think that clue was? They had an laminated system card, and he thought to himself, aha, surely they wouldn't have a laminated system card if they weren't pretty good. He based his next decision on the fact that the opponents had a laminated system card. I don't know what sort of success rate that would have.
You don't see too many laminated system cards floating around nowadays.
Yeah, you see some grubby looking old things that have been folded over and they've got things written across them and scrawled here and there. If you come across somebody with a laminated system card, it's safe to assume that, you know, they're a sort of serious sort of partnership. And if it doesn't work, blame Scott Smith.
Oh, that's fantastic. Is that you, Ethel? Where do you think you're going? Here is a preview of the bailiff's question for next week. Tune in to hear what the ruling is.
I want to test him this week and just see how generous he could be. Some people would say not very. Talking about the revoke law, where I think it's probably generally accepted, you know, if somebody revokes, you either get a one-trick penalty or a two-trick penalty. But sometimes the director mumbles something about it could be more if you felt like you were disadvantaged. What's that all about, Patrick? How can you get more than one or two?
One of the things that I noticed on NZB website is that there's a discussion paper up there for master point ranks and grades.
I saw that.
Sort of the introduction of the two new grades, the platinum and the emerald grade. And questions have been asked about the introductions of further ranks above emerald. And also how ranks might affect eligibility for graded tournaments, in particular, should a player with less than 58 points with a rank of local master and therefore intermediate in grade and with 20 plus stars be eligible for intermediate tournament? This sort of changes thing, local master. What do you think? The adjustment of gaps between ranks which are not consistent. That's probably something like what Jackie Blue was referring to, the intermediate grade and bugger all available for the restricted open grade with a drive to get these intermediates into open. I think there is a significant step between intermediates and then going into playing in the opens. I would like to see restricted open tournaments. I know Hamilton's tried to host restricted open tournaments. And yeah, we just don't get the numbers of entries.
It's annoying because those people that are in that grade are usually sort of fairly keen players who want to play. But the trouble is there's just not really enough of them to run a tournament for them, you know? That's the trouble.
Yeah. If you like, have a read of the paper that we're referring to on the NZB website and send in your ideas or your thoughts to bridgezoneshuffle@gmail.com and we'll get into that story next week. You've got bridge this weekend. I don't, Barry. I'm having a weekend off.
I thought you had every weekend off.
Yeah, true. Have you done your Congress entry yet?
Did, but I don't know whether we've paid yet. Well, there's no early bird discount. So, you know, you think, why would I bother? But there's something even better.
What's that?
Apparently, if you play by the 15th of October, you go in the draw to win a free entry. And I think they're going to give four people a free entry to Congress.
All right, well, that's it from us for this week. We will catch you next week.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international nationwide. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.